you know, in that election year, there actually wasn't that much controversy. They just had an election and the results came in and Cleveland lost. But in that election year, I would say, look, that was the right outcome. We don't want presidents who are who can just go to one region of the country and run a regional campaign and win the presidency. That is exactly what the Electoral College is designed to prevent. And by the way, Grover Cleveland seems to have realized this himself, and he came back 4 years later and won the presidency.
Now, was this his first run for presidency, or was this for re-election? Because he's the only man in history, or the only president in history, who won twice, but they were non-consecutive terms.
Right. This was the election in the middle. So he was an incumbent running.
I see.
And then he lost, and then he came back and won again.
Oh, that's fascinating. Who came up with the Electoral College? The Founding Fathers?
Yes, at the Constitutional Convention, they did. And the system exists pretty much as it was designed by the delegates to the convention, except that the 12th Amendment modified, it used to be that you would cast, the electors would cast just two ballots and not distinguish between presidential and vice presidential votes.
Right.
The 1800 election ended in a tie because of that system.
Right.
A tie between the president and vice presidential candidate. So the 12th Amendment modified that.
Right. And in fact, I was shocked. I've been doing a lot of research on Thomas Jefferson lately. I was shocked that Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr won. They split the vote. Then they did it again, and they split the vote. Then they did it. And it happened multiple times, and this wasn't sorted out until February, I guess, of 1801. And then finally there was some sort of tiebreaker in Jefferson's favor, and then Aaron Burr became the vice president.
Right. So it took 36 votes in the House, but then
36 votes, and it was it was split 36,
right.
35 times, and then finally 36 times. Can you imagine? I mean, boy, I remember when George H.W. Bush said in the year 2000, when you know, there was the whole Bush-Gore thing. He said the night of the election, he went through a whole package of Rolaids or something because it was so, so anxious. Were there any other times where the popular vote and the Electoral College vote were different?
Well, some people will throw 1876 and 1824 in there.
Oh, well, of course. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't really agree with including either one of those, but you will hear anti-Electoral College people throw those in. The 1824, the reason I disagree with it is because there was no national recorded popular vote. Some states were not had not given their citizens the ability to vote in the presidential election at all. The state legislatures were selecting the electors on their own. So there was no national popular vote total. Now, of the recorded popular vote, did the guy, you know, did he lose? Yes. But whatever, the whole thing wasn't recorded. That's not a good example.
Yeah.
1876. I would say that's not a great example only because that election outcome really had a lot more to do with the aftermath of Civil War and Reconstruction, and there was fraud and voter suppression, and there was just a lot of stuff like that going on. There were a lot of problems that year, but I don't really think it's fair to pull it in as an example of the Electoral College coming up with a discrepancy like that.
Okay, now, obviously, you know, this is a subject of great importance to our history and so forth and political science background and so forth. But why did you even write this book? I'm just curious. There must have been a catalyst event. I assume maybe it would be the 2000 election.
The catalyst event was I was in a car wreck and broke my arm. I'm not making this up. You should always wear your seatbelts, by the way, in taxi cabs because they get in wrecks too.
Ah.
But I broke my arm and I was in law school. And I needed something to do that would not require me to take notes in class because I could not take notes in class. And so I switched to this independent study for the Electoral College for one of my classes. And that's really how I started that. And I mention it mostly because, you know, I didn't set out to become this Electoral College defender. You know, I had no intention. I had every intention of writing a good independent study paper without taking notes in class. But what I did discover during that process is that the system is so much more important than I'd ever realized.
Sure.
And I just had no idea. Nobody had ever taught me about this in school. And I mean, I was like anybody else. But I ended up learning about it by myself in law school with the help of a professor. And I, from there, I kind of, there was a series of events, but it turned into a LarVue article, turned into a book, and it's kind of been a domino effect. But,
sure.
But that was really how it started.
Good. And the name of the book is Enlightened Democracy, The Case for the Electoral College. Who's the publisher?
At Colonial Press. It's for the paperback second edition.
And this is endorsed by some different people, including Ed Meese and Ken Starr, and that's quite good. Tara Ross. Tara is spelled T-A-R-A Ross. Okay, let's talk about the 2012 election. If somebody thinks, again, this is just some sort of arcane subject, who cares? It's important for law school classes, maybe, but that's not for where the average person is. Maybe this explains why Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and the Obama and Biden, why did they go to Ohio so often? Why were they even going to Pennsylvania after a while? Why was Florida, again, from this radio station, why was that such an important stop? It helps explain that, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's because you have to win a majority of states' votes. And in order to do that, you have to spread your appeal across really large portions of the country. Now, you get a lot of criticism of the Electoral College at about this time, once every 4 years, and people say, it's only about the swing states. It's only about Ohio. That's not fair, you know. Now, what I would say in response to that is a couple things. One is, look, swing states and safe states, their identity changes all the time. In West Virginia used to be Democrat, voting really Republican right now. Texas used to be Democrat, of course, also voting Republican right now. California used to vote Republican, is now voting Democrat. There's a whole slew of southern states that voted for Bill Clinton that would not be caught dead voting for Barack Obama right now. Virginia, North Carolina, new swing states. So this is, I could give you a whole bunch of examples. This changes a lot. And by the way, for people who think Ohio is this permanent thing, not so clear that it will be because of the way it's losing electoral votes, if nothing else. So this is just, it is something that is changing. It is in flux, and it is not permanent. And if any state ever decides it is being ignored, as I think West Virginia is a great example of that, felt ignored by the environmental policies of the Democratic Party in 2000, they will make their views known, and they will either switch or they will start supporting a third party to such an extent that it's hard to tell which way their vote's going to go. That's number one. Number two, I would say, look, elections are not only about the campaign commercials that you hear in the final weeks of the campaign, the ones the swing states are so happy are gone now. It's not only about those commercials. It's about 4 years of governance and what people thought about that. You know, the reason Texas was so safe is because they'd already made up their mind about Barack Obama and his health care plan and all of this, you know, other stuff that he had going on. And so California, the same thing, except they felt more positive about it. So, you know, every state is important.
Yeah.
Romney did not want to lose 38 electors from Texas, and he would work very hard not to. Nobody is ignoring anybody without taking a risk, as they did in West Virginia. So this is a system, look, that serves all of us. I think that sometimes it takes a little investigation into the history, into the operations and how it works. And, of course, that is not helped by the fact that our schools are not teaching us about it. But once you really delve in and see what it's about, you see this is something that is serving us.
Yeah, that's a very good point. In most cases, the states are 100%. And what I mean by that is okay, Florida, let's say, I don't even know who got Florida, but let's take Texas. You say there are how many electors in Texas?
We have 38 electors in Texas.
All right, so 38. This is that 303 that Obama got versus the two whatever it is that Romney got that they keep talking about. It's the electoral, it's these people that you're talking about. It's obviously based on the population, but in most cases, it's winner take all. But I believe there are some states, if I'm not mistaken, just a couple, where the Electoral College can be split, or it's a per capita based on the voting and not based on, you know, winner take all.
Maine and Nebraska do it slightly differently, and they do it by a congressional district system. So the winner of the vote in each congressional district gets one elector, and that leaves two at-large votes that get awarded to the winner of the state vote. Now, Maine and Nebraska have 4 and 5 electoral votes, so...
Yeah.
It's difficult. Nebraska actually did split at one time, but that's the only time it's ever been split. It's more of a mathematical possibility than something that's going to happen that often.
Sure. You know, it's funny, but as a Floridian, I felt that my vote was more significant than, say, some of my brothers who live in Los Angeles who felt like, you know, their vote were, you know, it was a done deal.
You know, I guess a couple of things, though, is one is if you really are in a state that is so safe, like California or Texas, look, then you probably, you have more problems than just how your presidential electors are going. You probably don't like the outcome of your gubernatorial election. You probably think your state senator is completely wrong, you know, your United States senator. I mean, you're probably losing lots of statewide election. And this is just another statewide election. As I said, we have 51 purely Democratic elections. It's a statewide election. And so you and your party need have a lot of work to do in your state, and I'm not trying to be flip about that. You know, I'm just saying it's just, you know, and I think, by the way, in Texas, a safe state like Texas, we've had so many Republicans for so long in statewide office. I honestly think, I don't think that's as stable a situation as it's sometimes painted to be. Like anything else, you know, when you've got one party in control for too long, they start to take it for granted and they make bad decisions and there's infighting and there's all this stuff that just goes on because we're humans. Mm-hmm. And I don't, this is stuff that both parties have constant work to do in any given state just to make sure they stay ahead. And so, look, in California, Republicans have an awful lot of work to do.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody denies that. But they have work to do in every election, not only in the presidential election. But, you know, the other thing I would say is I think sometimes people are just too quick to assume that it doesn't matter. Some of the polls that were coming out of some of the states this year, you know, you wonder how many people just stayed at home because they thought they couldn't make a difference and if it would have mattered. You know, all of the swing states that went for Obama, they went by not very large margins, really. And how many people stayed home thinking, well, Pennsylvania always goes blue. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm not so sure. You know, it was if people would just
right.
assume their votes matter and go.
No matter where they live.
A different landscape.
No matter where they live. All right. Right. I assume California has the most electoral votes. Is that right?
They do. They have 55, and Texas is next with 38. And then Florida and New York, you guys are tied at 29.
And who has the least? Hawaii?
Well, the least would be, I think there's like 8 states that have 3. Everybody has a minimum of 3 electoral votes because you have a minimum of 3 representatives in Congress.
Sure.
It's exactly the same as your representatives in Congress. So.
Well, you know, it's funny, and appearances can be very, very deceptive. If you were watching the results on Tuesday night itself, let's say starting at about 7 o'clock when the polls close in the eastern part of the country. Okay, so that didn't even include Florida because, again, we have 2 time zones here in this particular state. So as these things were closed, and I guess Indiana was closed because they are on a different time zone, which is weird, but anyway. All right, so as these things were happening, it looked like Romney was ahead because the you know, the news stations were able to call based on, you know, the votes cast and also the exit polling and so forth. They were making educated guesses as to who, you know, who was winning which particular state. And in most cases, they're correct. But again, that was wrong in 2000 mm-hmm. with the state of Florida. And by the way, any state with more than one time zone, they should never call it before.
Never call.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
And I look, we will never know what could have happened in 2000. But you just wonder.
Yeah.
Because what I remember about that is when Florida was called, just how you felt like the election was over.
Well, right.
If we lost Florida, it's over. And how many people in the Central, Mountain, Pacific Time, who were Republican voters, just said it doesn't matter anymore and
right.
went home. And so even though we say today that Al Gore won the popular vote, I mean, would he have? Kind of wonder. You know, we'll never know.
Well,
it's
that's
purely
true.
Theoretical.
And there was military
Florida,
votes. There were military votes that weren't counted. And you know, presumably that would have gone towards Bush as opposed to
right.
Gore.
And in Florida, how many people in the panhandle? You hear stories of people that were standing in line and just went home because they thought it was over. And I don't think that election had to be close, personally. But it's something that there is no way to prove it one way or another. We will never know.
All right, now.
But media should never, they should just always err on the late side in calling things, in my opinion.
I would agree with you.
People should ignore the calls, too. If you're standing in line, you should just go vote. You know, don't ever assume that the media is right.
And I think personally, and this is coming from a Christian perspective, but I think we have a stewardship before God for all of our actions and we'll be accountable. And I think voting and voting your biblical values, that's my view, is something you should be doing even if, you know, everybody's against you. But if God is for us, who can be against us? But going back to this electoral college, this second election, that's mere formality, obviously. There isn't such a thing as an elector saying defying what the way the people went, is there? I mean, that couldn't happen, could that?
Wait, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, in other words, okay, you have 38, you said, from Texas?
Right.
Okay, suppose one of those 38 human beings, these are all human beings we're talking about, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's suppose one of those 38 human beings was a diehard Obama fan. I mean, this is totally hypothetical. Mm-hmm. Let's say when they going through the pomp and circumstance or whatever, where they're actually casting the Electoral College votes, what if one of those from the 38 from Texas said, I'm voting for Obama, I don't care what the voters of Texas said. They can't do that, right?
Well, there's a couple things about that. One is, yeah, they probably can. I mean, states have different laws that purport to bind electors, but there's a question about whether it can be enforced or if they just have a free speech right to do whatever they want to do. But what I would say about this is that it's not a big danger. We're not expecting any diehard Obama fans to cast ballots for Romney or vice versa. There were 38 Republicans appointed in Texas. There was a whole different slate, 38 Democrats who could have been appointed.
Oh, I see.
If Obama had won. So, and it's that way in every state. These are completely different individuals. So we're never asking somebody to do something they don't just want to do. And the way these electors are appointed, by the political parties in the first place, it's often just a reward. You know, you've given time and money and
yes.
energy and resources, and so now your reward is you get to go participate in this formality, this ceremony. That's really pretty cool, you know.
Where do they actually go?
It's different in every state, but it's usually the state capital.
Oh, I see. Okay, so this will happen 51 times then in sometime in December.
Right.
It doesn't seem to get much press, but I guess it's just mere formality.
Yeah, it is a formality. I mean, every once in a while, an elector does something different than you think they're going to do. But it's been, like, fewer than 20 times in all of American history that
were
indisputably supposed to do something else. You know, there were other circumstances, like, for instance, a presidential candidate died, and he had 60-something electors that didn't know what to do. But, you know, that's different. Nobody knew what they were supposed to do.
So, sure.
Less than 20, indisputably, we all knew what you were supposed to do, and you did not do it.
Sure.
So,
well, I think here's the bottom line. We're wrapping up this conversation. Mm-hmm. I think that the take-home value for people to remember this, if you only remember one thing, is that the founding fathers, and personally, this is coming from my perspective, and you can see this in Federalist Number 51 by James Madison, founding fathers believing in the doctrine of human imperfection and human infallibility. As James Madison put it, if men were angels, we wouldn't even need government. But because men are not angels, we need government, and we even need to protect ourselves from the government, since the government is run by men and they're not angels. And but anyway, so the founding fathers built a whole system, Byzantine labyrinth, if you will, of checks and balances and so forth, so that no one small group could claim too much power. The Electoral College is part of that process, and it helps explain why the politicians will go out and especially the presidential candidates, will target certain key states that have become battleground states. And as you pointed out, those battleground states can change over time. So maybe, you know, this election and last election, it was Ohio, Florida, and Virginia. Next election, it may be a variation thereof. So thank you so much, Tara. And any concluding thought for about half a minute?
No, I just encourage people to learn about the Electoral College. It is under siege right now, and there will be legislation in your state next spring asking you to sign on to this anti-Electoral College legislation. There are three chapters in my book about it, but there's also a website called SaveOurStates.com that will have information about it as well, and you can keep up with it there.
You know, it's so funny.
It's just a group of academics like myself who are trying to help the Electoral College.
You know, it's so funny. Is you could just picture somebody saying, you know, oh, this Electoral College is unconstitutional. Wait a minute. It's in the Constitution.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How many times are things said, oh, this is a woman's constitutional right to choose? You know, regardless of your views on abortion, it's not there, you know, in the Constitution. But the Electoral College is in there. So anyway, interesting.
Right.
Thank you so much, Tara. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Bye-bye now. All right. That's Tara Ross, author of the book Enlightened Democracy, all about the Electoral College. In fact, it's the case for the Electoral College, which is under siege, and it's one of those things that, as I say, the founding fathers, whether directly or implicitly because of the Christian worldview, they put it into practice. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. When we come back, we're going to talk about the election, especially as seen by the media coverage. And this is a very fascinating topic. Tim Graham of the Media Research Center, they are the best when it comes to actually analyzing. And as Bernard Goldberg once said, from a conservative perspective, that's true. From a conservative perspective, but let's face it. I mean, come on. The dominant mainstream media in America is very liberal. In fact, the Media Research Center, they're the ones who put out that wonderful bumper sticker that says, I don't believe the liberal media. All right. When we come back, Tim Graham on media bias and the 2012 election.